Here we are in the West End of London once again with the truth about markets on Resonance FM 104.4, the best radio station in the world, according to many, many news outlets, including Al Jazeera, recently voted Resonance 104.4 FM one of the best radio stations in the world. My name is Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacey Herbert, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking about the truth about markets. We got a few stories here, a couple of hot stories. One, we've got boffins create zombie dogs. Another one, protesters to disrupt soldiers' funeral in the U.S. That's a whole thing about the evangelicals. But first, Stacey Herbert, I want to talk about the survey recently released and reported in the Guardian newspaper. 89% of people, virtually 9 out of 10 people of the public, disagree with the government over the use of private firms to run public services.
89% of British people.
Yeah, they've come to realize that the PPP initiative, the private-public partnerships, the brainchild of Gordon Brown and Tony Blair, is a complete scam, and it's a complete and utter breakdown in government, representational government. It's a giveaway of UK taxpayers to private contractors who turn around and hire less people. Services break down, rail systems break down, hospital bugs increase, education system deteriorating, needing for top-up fees, private contractors' salaries and bonuses increasing. So basically, the PPP partnership of Tony Blair and Gordon Brown is a pass-through mechanism which allows taxpayers' money to go directly into the pockets of a few private contractors. That's essentially what it is. It's called stealing.
To put it, I understand,
you know,
that word.
You don't need a PPP. You don't need a big alliteration. You don't need a big fancy term. Just call it stealing, because that's what it is. These private contractors who control the government have figured out a way to get the government to help them steal money from the taxpayer. Now, these services, when they break down, like the hospitals and the rail system and the education services, once it all blows up, of course, the taxpayers once again will be asked to rebuild from scratch all these services. Taxes will go up.
Mm-hmm.
And taxpayers don't win. I mean, this has been going on since Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
You know, this initiative to disintegrate, to dissolve the public services. And then you get Gordon Brown, this big asswipe, is in continental Europe lecturing Europeans on how to run their economy. Okay?
Yeah.
And he says, oh, you know, we got more people employed. But if you do an apples-to-apples comparison of employment numbers, you find that that's a completely another lie. You know, it's just like Tony Blair recently, this Downing Street memo, which caught the UK and US red-handed plotting to invade Iraq without any kind of legal authorization to do so. He just came out last week and said, oh, you know, we disavowed that memo.
We don't care.
And he's credible, right? Tony Blair is really credible. I mean, the fact that he gave away the public assets to private contractors to rape and pillage for a few bucks. So now we're supposed to believe him? But he says that the disavowing the memo? No. Do we believe him now that we know that the entire Iraq adventure was for the benefit of other contractors, more contractors from Halliburton and Exxon and BEA?
BAE.
Whatever. Okay. And I think some defense contractor from the, I think BAE just got a huge contract now to run services in Iraq. So it's a big, big scam. You know, it's not a big secret anymore. I don't think there's any sentient human being out there who would think that their reason U.S. and the U.K. went into Iraq was anything short of commercial exploitation. There's no moral ethics involved at all.
No.
And that's become painfully obvious. So all these soldiers are dying in vain. In the U.S., it's pretty remarkable, the U.S. participation in Iraq, because you've got U.S. contractors have gone to battle with U.S. soldiers.
Yes, indeed. We told all last weekend. We told everybody. They're battling each other out there.
And we figured it out. Actually, we gave this some thought over the weekend. It's actually a race issue, isn't it? Because the U.S. soldier in Iraq are the poor people, the black people.
In America, yes.
They get sucked into the military to get out of the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. contractors are, by and large, white.
And you see that from the videographic evidence.
So the U.S. white contractors in Iraq, at the behest of the evangelicals back home,
mm-hmm.
are murdering black people,
mm-hmm.
the soldiers. And we also figured out that this was in a way for the U.S. white people to take control of the Baptist religion.
Yes,
you know,
we
the
did.
Baptist religion is typically black.
Yeah.
In America.
We thought so.
But now it's white.
Yes.
You know, the white people, they want to move in on the black evangelical turf. So they're in, they send the black people to Iraq, then the white contractors kill them.
So
then
you're
when they go back to America, they take over evangelicalism because they like the whole Baptist evangelical movement because they got a lot of votes there. If they can manipulate votes, then these contractors can manipulate these PPP initiatives. And they'd be PPPing on everyone's face. It's one big golden shower. That's why they name it PPP. It's pee-pee. It's urine. It's
okay.
A big bag of urine squirting in everybody's face.
That's good.
So 89% of the public here in the UK is against the PPP initiatives. They want to go back to the government running public services. That's what governments do best, run public services. The reason is because if you have a big system like a rail network, you need cooperation from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cooperative business model. That's the way you run a railway. In the case of private contractors taking over the railway, what you end up is you're selling individual pieces to individual contractors who then compete. They don't cooperate. They compete. And, of course, they cut corners. They don't lay rails. They don't do maintenance. People die. And then they say, oh, it's the cost of doing business. What's the cost of doing business? Oh, yeah, some commuters died. That's the cost of doing business, but you're private contractors. We don't care. You can't sue us because all the assets are off balance sheet somewhere. We don't even claim ownership. We control it, but we don't own it. It's off balance sheet. Gordon Brown's entire economy is off balance sheet. That's how he can claim perpetual growth is because all the risks are off the balance sheet. He's like Enron times a million. Gordon Brown. He's one big Enron. He's one big Enron black hole of non-accountability. Tony Blair sitting there in House of Commons looking over to Tony Blair. What does he see? A big black hole of non-accountability. It's a big vacuum. Nothing's going on. But on a lighter note.
Oh, that's nice.
No, it's talking about the evangelicals. You know, evangelicals are in Iraq killing black people because, you know, racism is something that's alive and well in America. They can't get enough of it.
No.
And check this out. If you didn't think America's gone neo-Nazi, then you haven't read this story from Yahoo News.
Okay. What? Tell it. Like it is, honey.
This Marblehead soldier who was killed in Afghanistan is scheduled to be laid to rest on Monday, but a church group from Kansas is disrupting the services. News Center 5 Hale Huff reported that Sergeant Christopher Piper, who served in Afghanistan, his funeral is being disrupted by a group in Westboro Baptist Church. They're protesting. They're protesting the people dying in Afghanistan. According to these evangelicals, the reason Americans are getting dead in Iraq and Afghanistan is because God hates gays.
Oh, my God.
God hates gays. And
does
therefore, he's sending Americans into Iraq and Afghanistan to get killed, according to these evangelicals.
That explains how they're losing.
Yeah, they're holding up all kinds of placards and slogans, and they're holding up signs depicting homosexual sex.
No, they're not.
With slogans such as, Pope in hell. God hates the U.S.
Pope in hell?
Pope in hell.
What does the Pope have to do with a dead
soldier
in Iraq? It
sounds like
that
old Poppin' Fresh Doughboy. Remember that little commercial with the Poppin' Fresh Doughboy? I don't know if they get that over here in the U.K. Pillsbury. Poppin' Fresh Dough. You know, you take the Poppin' Fresh Dough, you crack it on the edge of the counter, and a little doughboy pops out.
Yeah, I used to like that.
And they got the Pope in hell now. The Pope in hell. It's a new dessert. Pope in hell.
Oh, really?
They got the spotted dick. Why not the Pope in hell? Give me some roast, some potatoes, some peas, some, what do they call them, squishy peas, mashy peas, flatty peas?
Mushy peas.
Mushy peas.
Something like that,
give me
yeah.
the mushy peas, the roast beef, and a Pope in hell. Then a spotted dick.
What are the ingredients
the Pope's
of a Pope
got a spotted
in hell?
Dick. The Pope in hell?
Yeah.
Well, it's like one of those little conical caps. You know, the pointy cap in a mashed potato.
That's mashed a potato. Dessert.
It's a dessert. It's a potato dessert. It's a potato-based dessert. Because the conical cat, you know, in the potato is pure sugar. Sugar and potato.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
It's just otherwise known as a donut.
Okay.
Which is like sugar fried in lard.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? Which is like a derivative of carbohydrate.
Carbohydrate.
Yeah. So you got a Pope in a hat and a pipe and a dick and all that stuff. It's spotted. It's all happening. Now, zombie dogs. Let's talk about the zombie dogs. This is, by the way, the Truth About Markets. My name is Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacey Herbert. As we are every Saturday, breaking it on down for you so you don't have to. Because we know you're lazy bastards out there. You want us to do all the reading for you. You want us to do all the number crunching. Mm-hmm. Well, it's okay. We're happy to do it. Serve it up to you. Fresh. With the Pope in hell dough. Boy. According to this, Boffins create zombie dogs. Okay, U.S. scientists have succeeded in reviving a dog after 3 hours of clinical death, paving way for trials on humans within a few years. The Pittsburgh Safar Center for Resuscitation Research has developed a technique in which the subject's veins are drained of blood and filled with ice-cold salt solution. It sounds like the Reagan
Is that
funeral.
What killed them, the dog?
The animals are considered scientifically dead as they stop breathing and have no heartbeat or brain activity, but 3 hours later, the blood is replaced, and the zombie dogs are brought back to life with an electric shock. Plans to test this technique on humans should be realized within 1 year.
Oh, my God. I bet they're going to try it out in one of these foundation hospitals here first. You're going to be like, oh, here's somebody conveniently dead of C. difficile, and they're going to take your blood out, inject you with saline solution.
Ice-cold saline solution.
Ooh. That would be like a bad hangover. It must feel like really, really painful.
That's much better, much worse than a blackout.
Yeah.
You were clinically dead. Clinically dead for 3 or 4 hours, 7 hours. Then brought back to life with an electric shock.
But who are they going to bring back to life? I mean, if you die in a car accident and you lose like your head and they keep bringing you back. I can't see. It would be a nightmare. It's a living nightmare.
No, I think this is something they're going to bring over to Guantanamo Bay Torture Center.
Oh.
They're going to torture people until they're dead and then bring them back to life and torture them some more.
Well, that will help Bush and Blair justify their torture. They'll say, we're not killing them.
They're dead.
We keep bringing them back to life.
You can't accuse us of torture. The people are dead. They're dead people. How do you torture a dead person that's not covered in the Geneva Convention? Therefore, it's okay.
God, all these crimes are making sense now.
On this show, because it's all about a market. It's the truth about markets. If you understand the truth about the markets, you understand what's really going on, the motivations and the heresies being committed in our name by these so-called leaders who are working as a front for a few corporations whose objective is to steal all our money. Yeah. Steal all our money. That's what these companies are up to.
Put us in debt.
Theft and debt. Thieving debts. But, you know, the real estate bubble is collapsing.
We told you 3 weeks ago, told you to get out. That was our tip. That was our market tip for 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe. Mm-hmm. Max Kaiser told you the market is about to collapse. But no, you were too busy texting, trying to get Live 8 tickets.
Live 8. Biggest scandal of the year.
That's happening right now.
Bono and Geldof are lecturing, going to be invited to talk at the G8 conference.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about it is that we got the three Bs, Bono, Bin Laden, Bush. These three guys are on the same side of the war against humanity.
Mm-hmm.
They're all crooks. They're equal. They're equally menacing. Bono, Bush, and the third B.
Bin Laden. They're all financial terrorists.
They're all financial terrorists.
Uh-huh.
The 9/11 was a financial terrorist act. Mm-hmm. We know this from the records. There are bankers. Allegedly, Buzzy Krongard.
B. Buzzy.
Oh, no, another B. Blair, Brown, Buzzy, Bono, Bin Laden, Bush.
Bob. Sir Bob.
Bob.
Beelzebub.
It's all... Just connect the Bs.
If you know anybody with the name B, get out of here.
Kill them. If you see someone named B on the road, Buddha. If you see the Buddha on the road, kill him.
Yeah.
If you see Buddha, Bob, Bush, Blair, Brown.
Bono.
Bin Laden. Kill him.
Buzzy
Krongard. He's over there, Alex Brown, which is an investment bank in Baltimore, Maryland, not far from the CIA headquarters in the United States. And I used to work at Alex Brown when I was a stockbroker.
When you were a minor financial terrorist?
As a youth, back in the 1980s, he was over there at Alex Brown. I think he was like the chairman or the vice chairman or something.
Mm-hmm.
Then he moved over to the CIA. And the records show that leading up to 9/11, somebody bought, and using Alex Brown as a broker, lots of put contracts on airline stocks and insurance companies. Obviously, there was some insider information about those events. So those who knew could have alerted those who could have stopped it but chose instead to profit from it. It's called inside information. That's called financial terrorism. So the question is, you know, is Osama in on the gag? Of course.
Of course.
They're working
is.
Together. I mean, the actual cost of taking the towers down was $500,000. It's a very profitable trade because they made millions on these trades, tens of millions of dollars. There's a $2 million made in this trade, which is still unaccounted for. It's in Gordon Brown's unaccountable black hole. Unaccountability black hole.
I think it's in Tony Blair's. I think Tony Blair is going to use that to pay off this the collapsing house prices on his house.
Yeah, his house is absolutely crushed in value.
He's losing 100,000 pounds a month. We told you in January, our first episode, January 13th, we told you, Tony Blair, financial nincompoop.
Yeah.
Don't listen to him.
Well, this is the only reason I don't think that Tony Blair might actually, unless he's very, very clever, because he's such a stupid idiot when it comes to finances that you have to believe, you know, that he's sincerely idiotic. You know, because the fact that he sold his house in the posh neighborhood of Kensington.
No.
No. Of Liverpool.
No.
No. Of Ipswich.
How do you know the name of Ipswich,
Angel,
but you don't know
Islington?
Exactly. Islington.
Okay. He sold his Islington home at the bottom of the real estate market. Then he bought his new Connaught Square home at the top of the real estate market.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely did the worst financial thing he could possibly do, proving he's... By definition, if you look up financial jackass in the dictionary, you'll see Tony Blair's face pretty much is what you'll see there. Now,
okay.
So that gives him credibility in my eyes as not being part of the 9/11 scandal. I don't think he personally benefited from buying puts and negative bets on the insurance and airline stocks.
Oh, okay.
Because he's too stupid.
You're right.
But I think Brown, though, he looks a little too smug for himself. He looks a little bit too self-satisfied. I think he made a few bucks on that one. Insider trading. Somebody did. The CIA knew about it. Obviously, the CIA and the intelligence services of the UK knew a lot that's going on before they told anybody. This is what the facts are coming out now. Tell us. So why not put a little spread bet on? Why not get a little gravy on the meat? Make a few bucks on the side. Get a higher class of mistress. That's what they'd love to do in this country. It's all about getting... more mistresses. You would know about that, Stacey Herbert.
No, I don't. You have the highest class mistress in all of Britain, by the way.
Well, it's the most expensive. Honey.
It's always about money for you, isn't it?
It's the truth about markets, isn't it? That's the truth about markets. Meanwhile, if you were watching... we finished these evangelicals. I think we finished with them today. The zombie dogs.
The evangelical zombie dogs?
There's evangelical zombie dogs. They're proselytizing at the Walmarts. They fill their veins with ice-cold salt water, and then they proselytize for Jesus at Walmart.
Or Asda here.
What Chinese-made good would Jesus buy at Walmart?
Exactly.
Ask the frozen zombie dog to the greeting the newcomers to the Walmart store. Ruff, ruff, ruff. Bow, wow, wow. I'm a zombie dog for Jesus. I've got ice cold salt water running through my veins. I'm a zombie dog at Walmart coming your way. What else we got in the news here? We got the bogus analysis led to terror alert of December of 2003.
Yes, we remember that. All those British Airways flights to New York and Washington were turned around mid-Atlantic, sent back to Britain.
Why?
Because there was apparently terrorists. They had very clear, good evidence, according to Tom Ridge, who was Homeland Security Secretary at the time, that there was about to be a terrorist strike on one of these flights coming from either London or Paris to New York or Washington.
And this evidence turns out to be that some idiot in the CIA was misreading the news scroll on Al Jazeera.
Mm-hmm.
So you know the crawl of prices and news that goes underneath a news service like CNN or Al Jazeera, as if there's a difference. And some idiot in the State Department, you know, it said something like, you know, falafels, two for 29 cents. They misread it as being, we're going to blow up EA Airlines.
Okay.
You know, because they just got Arabic for Idiots down at, Wallstone's bookstore. What's the name of that bookstore? Bridgestone? Wallstone?
Waterstones.
Waterstone.
But blend them all together. There's Blackwells, there's Waterstones. Call it Blackstones.
Black Waterstones bookstore. got Arabic for Idiots, and they said two falafel for 29 cents. They thought it said, we're going to kill those BA people.
I've done that before, though. It's very confusing.
So they sent out they raised the terror alert from yellow to orange, and you know,
it weren't some of those flights met with fighter jets, based on a falafel for $2.29.
Yeah, but it's a GDP boosting, isn't it? It's all about GDP boosting. You can't make a mistake in this economy, because every mistake you make ends up, you know, boosting GDP. This is what the Adam Smith Institute, you know, has bastardized the words of Adam Smith so horribly that after the tsunami disaster on Boxer Day, they came out with a statement saying, oh, the tsunami is the greatest GDP booster for the Indian Ocean region we ever could have hoped for. It's too bad that Germans didn't flatten London more horribly in World War II, because it would have had more of a GDP boosting effect. This is what the Adam Smith Institute said after the Boxing Day tsunami disaster, because they feel that death equals GDP boost. This is their definition of economic growth. This is why an economy like the UK, which is supposedly growing at a rate that's enviable to Europe, but it's not enviable to anybody if you take into consideration the externalities that are going into the environment. Environmental externalities. That means garbage. That means carbon dioxide. That costs money eventually. It's called global warming. You know, people in the House of Commons arguing against caps on global warming carbon emissions do so while their ass is actually on fire. You got MPs on the floor of the Commons whose ass is actually on fire.
Shut up.
Arguing against global warming. Mm. Oh, it doesn't exist. It's a theory. We need more science.
What sort of drugs are you taking when you watch the Commons?
Externalities. Right? Cost money. So this so-called growth, which is all financed with borrowed money to line the pockets of private contractors at the expense of the taxpayer, who's going to have to come back and rebuild all these services anyway at 10, 20, 30 times the cost, it's not enviable. So Gordon Brown is lecturing Europe, you know, you got to really get with the program, adopt neoliberalism, and get your economies kickstarted and get your employment rate higher. Listen, pal, in Europe, they have a more sustainable economy. It's growing at 1.2, 1.5, 1.6%, but it doesn't generate nearly the same amount of trash, garbage, pollution, and carbon dioxide. If anything, the Europeans should be lecturing Gordon Brown and George Bush about how to run a more sustainable economy. You know, Dominic de Villepin, who's now in France, he should be lecturing Gordon Brown on how to run an economy more sustainably. You know, kill less people. Don't include death to prisoners in Guantanamo Bay as a GDP boost. This is what the definition of GDP growth in the U.S. is. How many prisoners did we kill today? How many people on death row did we kill today? How many people dying from obesity today? That's a GDP boost. How many people died from carbon dioxide poisoning today? That's a GDP boost. How many people are going to die from fallout from building new nuke plants? Oh, that's a GDP boost. Our economy is growing because people are dying, okay? The last time that made sense was the 1940s under a guy named Hitler, where they had those big ovens. And they said, well, yeah, they're dying, but it's a GDP boost. Our economy can't survive without it. Well, I got news for you, Exxon, British Petroleum, Chevron. You're killing us. You've turned the entire globe into one big death oven. And your defense is, it's a GDP boost. Okay, now come down here to the studio right now, Lord Brown, British Petroleum. Tell me that to my face so I can rip your face off and defecate down your neck, you environmental terrorist. You got a problem with that? Come on down here, mano a mano. You know, where is he? He's off with, you know, Lord Snootypuss hunting, fox hunting. He's with some aristocrats over the weekend, you know, polishing each other's knobs. You know, speaking of aristocrats, in America, is becoming just like Britain, an aristocratic dump heap. Okay, Ivy League costs in America are now $40,000 a year. So what is that in British pounds?
It's about 23,000 pounds.
A year to join the Ivy League, to be part of the club, the Ivy League club, which means you have access to Lord Brown and Lord Snootypuss, it costs you this amount of money. So the rich in America are effectively seceding. America was created to get away from aristocrats and royal a-holes. And now here we are in year 2005, and we're creating our own royalty, our own aristocracy, our own monarchy, at the expense of the people who are going to, at the end of the day, revolt. It's revolution times. Okay?
They've already eaten cake.
I had my cake, now I wanted your head. You're going down to the Bastille. Okay, you got the G8 conference?
Yeah.
Well, let the riots begin. Don't listen to Bob Geldof and what's his name? Bono. you know, Bono's got, you know, this is what they did to Bono. They invite him to the G8, right, to speak. Now, the thing is, according to this report from the New York Times, the State Department doctors Bono's quote.
The State Department doctors Bono's quote.
That's right. Here's what the State Department said Bono said. Or I should, you want to hear what Bono said first? I'll tell you what Bono said first.
Okay, yes.
This is what Bono said first. He said, the most important and toughest nut is still President Bush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He feels he's already doubled and tripled aid to Africa, which he started from a far too low a place. He can stand there and say he paid at the office already. He shouldn't, because he'll be left out of the history books. But it's hard for him because of the expense of the war and the debts. Okay? Now, listen. Let's review the phrase here. He says that Bush feels that he has already doubled and tripled aid to Africa, which he started from a very low place. Now, what Bono is saying here, is, if, and correct me if you have another idea, is that Bush is not really giving much aid to Africa.
No, he just feels that he has.
He's making it appear that he is, because they started giving so little aid. You know, if you're giving 0.0001% of GDP aid to Africa, if you go to 0.0002, you can say you've doubled your aid to Africa.
Yeah.
But if you translate that to dollars and cents, it means you went from giving them a $10 tip to a $20 tip. You know, and you know, the amount of aid the U.S. gives to Africa in dollars, I know, you know, pimps in Harlem that carry more than that in their sock. You know, it's virtually zero. Okay, now, this is what the State Department said, Bono said.
Okay.
Now, this is the same State Department that's been, you know, but they've invited Bono to speak at their G8 conference.
What spin do they put on their favorite puppet?
This is what the State Department said, Bono said. Bono, lead singer of the Irish band U2 and longtime activist for aid to Africa, echoed Geldof's praise for President Bush as he told an American television interviewer, quote, Bush has already doubled and tripled the aid to Africa. I think he has done an incredible job. 250,000 Africans are on antiviral drugs. They are literally owe their lives to America.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so basically, as this report points out, that by doctoring the text, effectively, they've completely, as they say in this news article, they've twisted the quote to mean the very opposite of what Bono was trying to say.
But the embedded Live 8 masses, this is all they've heard. They've heard the twisted quote.
That's right.
They're not going to read page 34 for the correction.
No. No. Right, that's okay. That's the problem when you try to run a society by texting. If you can't fit the message on a 5-bit text or, you know, a 5-consonant text. You know, this is worse than what Noam Chomsky was saying. You know, Noam Chomsky said the reason he's not on television more is because of a problem of concision. His points tend to last more time than is allotted between two commercial breaks. For this reason, he's not on TV much. For this reason, he's not known that well in America. He's known outside of America as an intellectual, but inside America, he's not known because his thoughts tend to last longer than the time you have between two commercial breaks. Now, imagine Noam Chomsky in the age of texting. Can you fit in a treatise like Manufacturing Dissent by Noam Chomsky on a text message? I don't think so.
Not yet.
But you've got all these groping groupies with their texting tickets to Live 8 to see Geldof and Bono and all the other posers up there who are promoting the neoliberal model. The neoliberal model is what they're promoting. The neoliberal model is what causes climate change and global warming. The neoliberal model causes climate change and global warming, which is affecting one continent more than any other continent, and that's Africa. Because of man-made climate change and global warming, Africans are suffering more than any other continent, and as a result, they're starving because they're experiencing desertification and drought. And what has Bob Geldof said you can't mention during the Live 8 show? Global warming. Okay, so why would he say that unless he was working for those who are perpetrating global warming? Well, he is working for those who are perpetrating global warming, as is Bono. Bono is an investment banker. He's a board member of a private equity group. These guys are totally conflicted. They do not speak for the people. They speak for the corporations. That's why on the Edinburgh March, I suggest riots. To let the people in power understand
that the people, you know, who are part of what I call niggeronomics, okay, that means me and you and probably everyone listening to the show, except for the intelligence officers who just tuned in.
They do every day, I have to say. I track our listeners.
Yeah, they need to get serious now.
But they need to write and say, we've had enough cake. No more cake. I'm obese enough.
Yes. Meanwhile, the banks, you know, more sharks in the home loan waters. The risk of default is growing on home loans as the banks continue to lower their lending standards.
And raise their interest rates that you have to pay them.
Interest rates in America just went up. The truth about markets, Alan Greenspan just raised interest rates again. The fact is that China is gobbling up so much natural resources around the world that commodity prices are going to go higher. Oil is going higher. That's inflationary, which means that interest rates have got to go higher, which means that your mortgage payments are going to go higher. It means if you took out an interest-only mortgage on your house with a balloon payment that kicks in after 2 or 3 years, your mortgage payment goes from £300 or £400 a month. Suddenly in 2007, it's going to be £1,500, £1,600, £1,700 a month. Plus the market will have crashed by then, so you'll be sitting on negative equity. You'll be paying the bank 5 times what you're paying them now to debt service a worthless piece of crap up there in Holloway Road, up there in Kensington, up there in Heathrow.
Ipswich.
Heather Park. What's it called? Heathen Park?
Heathen Park.
There's Heather no, Switch?
I don't know. I don't know.
Crouch End?
Crouch End. That's where all the media lovies live.
Where's the other one? Crouch End and then Heathrow. Heathen.
Oh. Hampstead.
Oh, yeah. Hampstead.
Heathen.
Heathen Park. Hampstead
Park. The Tories would love that one.
The Tories. Why don't they put Boris Johnson ahead of the Tories and they get serious? I'll tell you what, the Tories can win. The Tories totally screwed up last election because they failed to take on board the environment. You see, the Tories are known, as conservative parties are around the world, to being economically shrewd. You know, they're the party of economic shrewdness, and the other party is usually the party of economic tax and spend and not terribly shrewd. So, being shrewd conservatives, the Tory party should say, Tony Blair, you need to get serious about climate change and global warming, and you need to get serious about carbon trading and carbon caps, the cap and trade technique, where you give, which they have, you see, they have the carbon, it's all in place. The only thing missing is Blair getting, you know, more serious about it and putting his foot down and telling the global world community, since he runs a G8 now, he's got to come out and say, look, we're very serious about these caps. Now, the Conservative Party, though, I think could have really made a huge, this is where that guy Saatchi, who is their guru, their spin doctor.
Lord Saatchi.
He dropped the ball, Lord Saatchi. You know, he thinks that it's all, still, they're still fighting the Margaret Thatchers. They're trying to resurrect. You can't resurrect the ghost of Margaret Thatcher because he lives in the House of Commons. His name is Tony Blair. You know, that's a complete non-starter. You got to start with something new, something fresh. I suggest, Lord Saatchi, and you can come down here too. I'm going to talk to you face to face, mano a mano. Lord to surf, okay? Lord to surf. Lord Saatchi, you got to rebrand these conservatives as environmentally sound. They promote carbon trading, carbon cap schemes. It's a winner. You say you got to get tough. You see, the conservatives love to get tough, but they instead of getting tough with more cops, which is a downer, more ASBOs, that's a downer. Get tough with the environmental polluters, you see? Then the voters will say, we need a tough guy in there. Yeah, these carbon abusers. Let's bring in a tough guy. You see? And then you get a lot more votes. You could probably even take back the big chamber down there.
The House of Commons.
The House of Commons. It could be yours once again, run by the Tory party.
I'd vote for them.
And call it the new Tory party. You know, Labor won because they rebranded themselves New Labor. Okay? Why doesn't the Tory party brand themselves New Tory? First of all, they don't like the word Tory. They should embrace the word Tory. It's part of their brand. You know, get over yourself, Lord Saatchi. Take those funny-looking glasses off. Wear some normal glasses. Okay?
Yeah, those are so 80s. When
stop being bi-curious.
You are naughty.
Speaking of global warming.
I'm hot.
The United States is pursuing some real crazy ideas because they refuse to admit that there is global warming. They refuse to admit that any of these scientists that predict global warming are in any way speaking the truth. So instead, to combat global warming, they propose a space ring to shade Earth.
A space ring.
A space ring.
Is that kind of like a cock ring for the Earth?
In a way, in a manner of speaking.
We are, you know, very close to Old Compton Street, I have to say.
The next time Earth ejaculates, there'll be a space ring giving it extra modality. The sperm will increase their modality, I believe, is what you would have if you had a global, an Earth-sized cock ring. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about a space ring to stop global warming. And the way this works is, here's an illustration of the ring and its particles of a spacecraft casting a shadow on the equatorial Earth to keep the particles in place. Gravitational significance shepherding spacecraft are employed that would herd the particles, much like a small moons keep Saturn's rings in place.
This sounds so Tom Cruise.
Well, this is a GDP boosting, isn't it? In other words, the fact is global warming is killing us.
Uh-huh.
America's response is we've never had a problem that we couldn't spend money to fix.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we've never had a problem that required a reduction in consumption. We've never had a problem that required us to think of ourselves as limited in any way because we were built on this notion of manifest destiny and wholesale slaughter of the indigenous population. And then the enslavement of half of Africa so that we could open Krispy Kreme donuts and make people fat as pigs. So here, they're saying global warming is something that we can fix using our genius by building a big space ring by shepherding moon particles. Because we're Americans and we can do whatever we damn well please. And if you don't like it, we're going to bomb the hell out of you. You know? Unfortunately, there's a term in economics, which we like to talk about here, the truth about markets, called diminishing returns. Diminishing returns. In other words, you know, at some point, the model breaks down. And you don't get the same bang for the buck you got when you were first banging your bucks. And the U.S. Is at this point, and they can't deal with it. This is why America's having mass social nervous breakdown in America. And it's also in the U.K., you know, where the people are basically in the U.K. I was reading that there is a kidnapping of a British citizen every day in the U.K. now.
No, there isn't.
Yeah.
Where did you read that?
I read that in the Post, in the Sun.
That's like Mexico.
Yeah.
Or the Philippines.
Every day somebody gets kidnapped in Britain. And held for ransom. And the people doing the kidnapping, they take the cell phone of the victim, mm-hmm. and they call the numbers and they say, we've just kidnapped the owner of the phone, your friend, and sent us £200 or £1,000 or £25,000, depending on what cut of suit the guy's wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if it's Lord Brown from BP, you'd ask for, you know, £25.
Yeah.
You know, but if it was Beckham, he'd ask for 25,000 million pounds.
Uh-huh. That's GDP boosting.
It's GDP boosting in the end because, A, okay, you get rid of the phone, so you have to buy a new phone. The money comes out of the bank. It's sitting there doing nothing. And it goes into the hands of the kidnapper who goes buys drugs with it and plays at the casino and buys a new car and buys some whores. So that's GDP boosting, right? And the economy is a winner. Everyone's a winner in this scenario. It's a win-win-win. It's a PPP, private partner publisher. You get private terrorists kidnapping public people. For the benefit of their landlords and their overlords and their Lord Snooty Pusses up there in Heathrow Park.
Heathrow Park.
Hempstead. Hempstead Park. They got a huge table in Hempstead Park. Who are they waiting for, God?
A table? What are you talking about?
They got a huge table set up in Hempstead Park. I saw a picture of it.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Just like 10 stories high.
Oh, it's art.
Yeah, it's art. No, that could be art. Or it could be like Stonehenge. Or it could be or like crop circles. They're trying to attract God. You see, they say, look, God, we got a desk for you.
Mm.
Come on down and help us. We need help.
Write us a new book.
See, in America, they started an evangelical movement. And they put, worshiping evangelicals in the White House. Here in the UK, they build a big desk in the middle of the park and ask God to take a seat and please help us. I think it's a lot more civil way to approach the situation.
It is.
The end result's the same. And eternal damnation and hellfire due to global warming and climate change, which even if you stop all the global warming and climate change right now, climatological inertia will take the situation well past the point of no return anyway. So this is basically, you know, this is the autopsy show. This is the UK, British, America autopsy show. We're you know, cutting apart the beast to figure out exactly where it went wrong. But there's no saving it, I'm afraid, unfortunately. So party on. You know, there's an American that's very well respected in Europe, very beloved, especially in France.
America.
An American.
Oh, an American. Okay, who?
Woody Allen.
Oh, yes.
Woody Allen, is he loved? He's loved in Europe.
He's not very loved in America.
Well, he's loved in Europe.
Yeah.
That's why I bring him up.
Okay.
He said he's talking about 9/11. Now, I mentioned 9/11 because, you know, Bush gave a speech last week and he mentioned 9/11 over and over and over again. He just couldn't stop talking about it because he thinks it's a big vote getter. Then Karl Rove, his spin doctor, was in New York. He said, you know, you can't be soft on the terrorists because they're 9/11. They'll come and kill you. So in other words, the message there is either vote for our policies that line the pockets of rich people or we're going to get Bin Laden over here to kill you. He's our hitman. He's our leg breaker. He works for us.
I'd vote for that.
Bin Laden, Bush, Blair, Brown, Bono, Bob, Sir Bob.
Beelzebub.
They're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difference. They're all thugs, murderous thugs, bullies, financial terrorists, full stop. Okay? If you don't like it, start a riot. That's the only choice we had. Throughout history, the people have only had one choice, ultimately. You can't reason with appeasers. You can't appease them. You can't appease these people. They're just going to keep stealing your money, stealing your money, stealing your money. You got to riot. Either riot or, you know, forget it. Riot or forget it. So Woody Allen says, he's talking about 9/11. He says, it's too small, 9/11. History overwhelms it, he tells Der Spiegel magazine. The history of the world is like, he kills me, I kill him, only with different cosmetics and different castings. So in 2001, some fanatics killed some Americans, and now some Americans are killing some Iraqis.
That's the truth.
So he put some symmetry there.
Mm-hmm.
That shock and awe is no more or less redeemable than 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've said on this show that the whole shock and awe thing was to prove to the world that Americans can be as sadistic as anyone else, because in America, the mentality is that sadism wins the day. It's a sadistic society. And we should also point out that the words freedom and democracy, which are supposedly the cornerstone of American society, were recently expunged from the Microsoft products at the behest of China. So the Chinese government, who took the Microsoft products on, said, we'll only take these products on if you expunge the words freedom and democracy from your products. Bill Gates, richest American, supposedly the biggest capitalist, got down on all fours, stuck his butt up in the air, got out the Vaseline, and had this big Chinese schlong penetrate deeply. Basically. I mean, tell me I'm wrong. Bill Gates, come on down here and tell me I'm wrong. You, Lord Brown, who else did I invite to come down here?
Charles Saatchi,
Lord Saatchi. You can all come down here and tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Okay? You can't tell freedom and democracy? Okay, you're gonna just write those out of your programs because the Chinese don't like it? Okay, who are you working for? There's another B, Bill.
Bill, oh my God. This is turning out to be a pattern.
Bill, Bob, Bin Laden, Bush, Brown, Blair. Okay, they're all working for the same side. It's a collusion. You know, Adam Smith, who everyone worships as the godfather of modern economics, he said more than, you know, the invisible hand thing. He also said thing like, if you put two industrialists in a room together, you're going to get price fixing. My paraphrase, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he said this is because you need regulation. The capitalism that's unregulated is unworkable. You know, people who say, we need to deregulate capitalism. We need to deregulate the markets. We need to become liberal. We need to liberalize the markets. Well, that's not what capitalism says you should do. Capitalism says you need to strike a balance between regulation and free enterprise. But according to the Adam Smith Institute, just like in the Catholic Church, after a couple of thousand years, the Bible became interpreted by American priests as an excuse to bugger their minors in the church. You know, it gets warped over time. So here you have Adam Smith, who's the architect of the capitalist model, and some 200 years later, and it suddenly becomes opposite of what he was talking about to begin with. They think, according to the Adam Smith Institute, it's a rape and pillage model. It's not. It's a balance between regulation and free enterprise. And the juncture of those two is something called price. It's the price. That's the invisible hand, the price discovery mechanism, because you're balancing the two. You know, you can't just take your public services and give it to private contractors for a pittance so you can have a nice retirement and everyone else gets shafted. That's not capitalism. That's insanity. It's Insanity Inc. being perpetrated by the bees. Blair, Brown, Bin Laden, Bush, Bill Gates, Bob Geldof.
In the meantime, the real bees are going extinct, aren't they?
Excellent point.
These guys have stolen nature and put it in their names.
Who else is going extinct? We learned this week. The hedgehogs. The hedgehogs are going extinct because of the bees.
The new bees, not the old bees.
The neo bees.
Everything's becoming new. New labor, new Tories.
Neo bees. We'll call them neo bees. Neo bees. Nairobi's. Who else is going extinct? A lot of plants in the UK are going extinct.
Plants.
A lot of species are going extinct in the UK. Why? Because of these neo bees.
Grass.
This unfettered capitalism, savage capitalism that thinks it's a good idea to... You know what they say Africa needs? You know what the conclusion of G8 so far?
No.
They haven't had the conference yet, but the preliminary reports say that the way to save Africa is to build more roads.
Yeah, for what? For their for who? Who has a car?
Well, if you wanted to actually come up with something that would be the absolute worst prescription for Africa, mm-hmm. it would be build more roads. Because the last thing Africa needs is more greenhouse gases. They're already the biggest sufferer from climate change and global warming of any place in the world. So their prescription is to build more roads so you can have more cars. And the roads, of course, are going to put asphalt over the earth and chop down some trees that are providing the oxygen. You see, it's insanity. It's Insanity Inc. They've got their heads so far up their keisters that right and white is black, right is wrong. You know, peace is war. It's, what's his name there?
A B? Does it start with a B?
You know who I'm talking about.
Peace is war. You know. Oh, Orwell.
Orwell.
Yeah.
It's Orwell. Orwell, you know, I mean, this is what it's become. The war is peace. The freedom and democracy, you know, has been co-opted by Chinese capitalists.
It's been bought by Chinese.
Completely bought. They own it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Woody Allen, he goes on to say, so he's making a symmetrical relationship between shock and awe and 9/11, which is pretty startling because he's a New York Jew, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's supposed to be, you know, Israel is supposed to be a big ally with the U.S., you know, but they're part of the Axis of Weasels, Israel, America, and the U.K.
But, they do no wrong, right?
Now, Tuesday's New York Post quotes the master director as saying, in my childhood, some Nazis killed some Jews. And now some Jewish people and some Palestinians are killing each other. Right. Well, that's kind of a fudge there. In other words, if he was really going to take this over the finish line here, he would have said, some Nazis killed some Jews and now some Jews are killing some Palestinians. But he said, now some Jewish people and some Palestinians are killing each other. But we know that the story there is that Israel, the Jews, are killing the Palestinians in much the same way that the Nazis killed the Jews.
But Woody Allen lives in New York.
But he lives in New York, so he has to be able to go get his bagels and lox. Yeah, I think he's going to have trouble anyway. But I think this story, I didn't see any follow-up on this story. It was on Drudge Report for about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then, you see, it didn't go on Fox News. He didn't go on TV to talk to Bill O'Reilly about it, so it doesn't exist. And he goes on to say, political questions, if you go back thousands of years, are ephemeral, not important. History is the same thing over and over again. Yeah. Well, the tide is turning in America. You know, people there are understanding now that they're being led by a chimp into a guillotine, into a chop house, into the mother of all quagmires. $1 billion a week, you get nothing. This guy Chalabi, remember before the war, he was trying to sell the U.S. on the idea that they could finance their excursion by selling the Iraqis oil in the secondary market afterward. You know, it's a big leverage buyout. He thinks he's like T-Boone Pickens. But they didn't count on the fact that maybe they would start a civil war. You know?
Or maybe he just didn't tell them that part.
You never plan on the... what's that Monty Python line? You never plan for the, not the Crusades, but the insurrection?
Not the Crusades, not the insurrection, when the Catholics all killed each other in Spain.
You never plan for the, for American, obviously.
No, there's just so much heat in here.
Yeah, there's heat, baby. Your nipples are rock hard.
That does it for me. Yeah. Yeah, rubbing the microphone.
You never plan
you.
For a blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah. It keeps that coming in and out of my not the crucifixion. Well, you never, Jesus said that.
Yeah, that was Jesus's line. We'll think of it when we stop thinking about it. But anyway, yeah, you never think about it when you're thinking about it because it comes back at you when you're not thinking about it. And then you have what's called in French, they call it the l'esprit d'escalier, the inspiration of the stairwell.
What's that? I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, it's like you're trying to think of something, and then you know you're leaving, and you're in the stairwell leaving, and then you think of it. You have the afterthought of it.
Yeah.
That's the l'esprit d'escalier.
Well, yeah. I'm sure that's going to happen to us today.
I'm sure it is.
I can't wait to learn the meaning of this word, though.
Well, I can't wait to finally figure out the phrase that we're trying to pinpoint. If you have an idea, send us an email. Where do they send the emails to?
thetruthaboutmarkets@gmail.com. It starts with I, the Inquisition.
That's right, the Inquisition. You never plan for the Inquisition.
No, you never think about it.
Now, how did that relate to what we were just talking about? What were we talking about?
Oh, we were talking about Chalabi when he encouraged Bush.
That's right. I said you would never expect a civil war.
No.
Okay. Speaking of 9/11 again. This new Freedom Tower being built at Ground Zero has gotten a bad review from the New York Times. They start off their commentary here by saying the darkness at Ground Zero just got a little darker. They call this tower shaped by fear. They go on to say that the first few stories resemble a prison and that the entire structure is emblematic of a society living in fear and living imprisoned by its fear. Yes or no, Stacey Herbert?
Well, I saw one of the photos of the building, and it does look like all those crusader castles that were left throughout the Middle East when they conquered the Muslims, right? And they left, but in order to rule the lands, they needed to build these prisons for themselves, which were... had those little slit prison-like windows as well. So it comes at a high cost, ruling the world, doesn't it?
Obviously. And it's all borrowed money. I mean, even at the height of the British Empire, you know, they didn't carry on all that debt.
No, they didn't.
So they had the ability to age gracefully. Let's say the British Empire has aged gracefully. It peaked, and then it has subsided. But there's still some dignity there.
Well,
in America, because it's all based on debt, when the empire pops, it's right to the ghetto with 200 million guns, a lot of fat people with donuts, and bad TV shows.
Well, that's the thing, is that in normal circumstances, debt makes you a servant to whoever you owe the money to.
That's right. In this case, the Chinese. That's who owns most of America's debt. That's why the Chinese, by the way, the last past week, the Chinese, they've been buying U.S. dollars and U.S. bonds with their U.S. dollars that they get with this huge trade imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
And America said, hey, that's great because you're helping keep our interest rates low. which helps us lend more money to real estate speculators, which makes our banks richer and our stock bonuses fatter. We love you, Chinese people. Then last week, the Chinese people said, hey, America, we're going to take your U.S. dollars. We're going to buy Unical. We're going to buy Maytag. We're going to buy Huffy Bicycle. We're going to start buying your U.S. corporations. What do you think about that, you fat, lard, Iraq war loser? And America's like, hey, man, you can't say that to us. We're not going to sell you all of our prized corporate assets. And China said, yeah, what are you going to do about it? Because if you protest, we're going to dump all of our U.S. dollars on the world markets, which are going to crash your bond market, spike your interest rates, and put 95% of your population into arrears on their mortgage debt. Idiot. And the U.S. said, well, pass that Peking duck and Feng Shui Ding. You know, it's like, let's all learn Chinese. Americans are very adaptive that way. You know, they got no choice. China's going to take Taiwan, whether America likes it or not, because they've got no leverage against China. China's going to end up owning Alaska. China's going to end up owning Hawaii because America's got no leverage. They owe China hundreds of billions of dollars. How are they going to get it? They got no money in the bank, and they're spending it all in Iraq. Yeah, so China's going to end up owning a lot of American. Now, Paul Krugman, as the New York Times columnist, he made a very interesting remark last week. He said, it's not like back in the 80s when the Japanese were buying all kinds of American goodies like Rockefeller Center. Because the Japanese were indiscriminate buyers of U.S. assets. They bought what were called back then trophy properties like Rockefeller Center, Pebble Beach Golf Course. They were buying Hawaii, too. But this was done indiscriminately and not with what you would say was a great deal of due diligence. They overpaid incredibly for these assets. And they were buying Hollywood studios. They wanted to get laid. Of course, they're Japanese. They're small. They want to get big-breasted Hollywood starlets to rub their big breasts in their little Japanese frames. They love it. So they weren't smart. Like a lot of people, they went to Hollywood and lost their shirt. Chinese, though, are different. They're taking all their money and they're investing it strategically. They're buying strategic assets like oil and big brand names in America and big, bad, fat computer systems. They just bought a big computer company from IBM. So the Chinese are no dummies. You ask even a New York Jew, who's the shrewdest deal maker in the world? They'll tell you Chinese people. You know, and that's coming from the New York Jew. The New York Jew is a famously very shrewd operator. He'll tell you the most shrewd operator in the world are the Chinese people. So they're in a position now to seriously make inroads into the U.S. economy. And I'll tell you something else, my friend. My friend Stacy.
What's that?
Warren Buffett, who we talk about here in The Truth About Markets as a market seer and a fountain of wisdom, he predicts that within 10 years, American taxpayers are going to be paying taxes to both the U.S. federal government and the Chinese government as a way to help assuage the damage of these trade deficits.
Because we owe them so much money.
That's right.
And they're buying Fannie Mae, aren't they?
The Chinese?
Fannie Mae shares, bonds, which is what your house... So ultimately, they own your house.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, they could buy Fannie Mae stock, you know, to go with the Fannie Mae loans that they already own.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they make a hostile raid for, like, a Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae is, like, 25% of the mortgage market in America. They would effectively own 25% of the houses in America if China bought Fannie Mae. You know, and why not? They've got the money. They've got the will. The U.S., being a debtor, is not really, can't do much. They can't go to war with China. They can't afford to, and they don't have the manpower. China has a standing army of something like incredibly strong numbers.
A couple hundred million. I know, it's crazy.
They've got an incredibly big army. They've got, you know, they're a tough competitor. They're playing the long game. The only one playing the short game is America. You know, America thinks that, oh, we made an extra quarter this past quarter, so we're, you know, we're going to pay ourselves another quarter. But China's looking at 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years, 500 years. They're looking at the big picture, just like bin Laden. He's looking at the big picture. Next week on The Truth About Markets, we'll be broadcast to you from Belmarsh, where I'll be held along with Stacey Herbert, and Charles Clark will be our special guest. On The Truth About Markets, we'll ask him, does he mind being called Scrotum Face by Stephen Bell? of the times. Until that time, hope your week is profitable. Bye, y'all.